Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. I think it'll also be displayed on the screen. Listen for the word of the Lord. He entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and said, "He has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." Then Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
This October, I was in Wheaton College, and one of the professors there said, "I sure miss Jeff Greenman." And I said, "Whoa, he's going to be preaching at Union Church." And the professor friend said, "Lucky." And we are very fortunate to have Dr. Greenman with us today. He is the president of Regent College. He is a theologian. He's an ethicist. He loves Jesus, and he is a really good friend, because I think this is like the third year you've agreed to come and preach a stewardship sermon, which are not easy sermons to preach. And I'm very excited to see how a very tall guy is going to talk about a very short guy, Zacchaeus. So here's Jeff.
Thank you. Yes, the tall guy from Canada is back to talk about stewardship, because Pastor Greg wants me to do that. And it's probably easier for someone other than the pastor to speak about stewardship. So here I am. I'm also back because I really like turkey, and this is the time of year to come back for turkey. So glad to be with you, and to be with you my first visit to your new space here. I have worshiped with you in the old space. I have worshiped with brothers and sisters under a very large tree in a little village in Malawi, where their regular meeting place was under a tree. No plugs, no wires. There's lots of places to worship the Lord, and where two or three are together, the Lord is with us. So I'm glad to be here with you and to talk about this passage as a way of talking about stewardship and money. This congregation has been under a bit of pressure, I think, financially. I don't know any of the inside scoop, but just knowing that you're on a very large facilities project and that the shift to this space must have been demanding, I'm sure a lot of you have been thinking about money, and this church has been thinking and talking and praying about money. So the stewardship sermon this year is a little different, I think, and their context is a little bit different, because I know many of you are very involved in the support of this place and of the great transition that's been underway here. So what I want to suggest is both for your encouragement and also to challenge you, because this little passage, it's very familiar as a children's Bible story, and you probably all know the song. Do you know the Sunday school song about Zacchaeus was "A wee little man and a wee little man was he"? Do you remember that? Yeah, of course you do. Well, there's more to this little passage than the song, and if we think of it as a kind of children's passage for song singing, we're going to miss some really wonderful treasure that is in this passage. So I want to kind of open it up a bit. And it's a passage that reminds us and teaches us about how significant the change is in our lives when we welcome Jesus into our lives. And you see with Zacchaeus that everything changes. The most important things in his life change on account of encountering Jesus and welcoming Jesus into his life with joy. It's a good sermon also for a day of thanksgiving and rejoicing and celebration and even turkey eating. So let's think about our friend Zacchaeus. So from the standpoint of this passage, we're in chapter 19 of Luke. I'm a big enthusiast of Luke's gospel. And the way that the story is unfolding is particularly from chapter 15 onward. There's a whole series of stories that are really about Jesus meeting various outcasts, marginal people, people that are on the fringes, the edges, people who are not really esteemed by the society in which the story takes place. There are people definitely on the outcasts. And then in chapter 18, there's two stories that you would both know, and they are the lead-up to this little story about Zacchaeus. And the little story about Zacchaeus actually answers questions that you get in the previous chapter. So in chapter 18, what you have is the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Do you remember that one? Jesus has a parable to tell. And it's really aiming at people who are self-righteous and trying to get at them, those who are really despising others. So the Pharisee takes pride that he's not an extortioner, he's not an adulterer, he sets himself over other people, especially that tax collector. The tax collector in the story says, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." Notice the tax collector repents. The tax collector recognizes their true status before God in a way the self-righteous Pharisees don't. Story number one. Then we go right on shortly to the story of the rich ruler. So if the first one is about a tax collector, the second story here in chapter 18 is about a rich man, and Zacchaeus is a tax collector and rich. I think Luke's got something to say here. So the story of the rich young ruler is one whose attachment to his wealth prevents him from responding to Jesus. He goes away sad. He doesn't welcome the gospel into his life. He doesn't welcome the invitation of Jesus because he hangs on to his riches. And that prompts the famous comment that it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to gain the kingdom of heaven, because clinging on to those riches gives you too much to squeeze through the eye of that needle, which is the needle of faith. And then that calls forth the question, well, who can possibly be saved? And the answer is God can accomplish what is humanly impossible. That sets the stage for Zacchaeus, who is both a tax collector and rich. And in the eyes of the world around Jesus, that makes it impossible for a person like him to be saved. He's one of those impossibles. You might even call him one of the deplorables. So that sets the stage for where we are. Zacchaeus is a tax collector. He's hated because he is a tax collector. He is ostracized. He's not just a tax collector, but he's kind of like the district manager of tax collection. And the way tax collection works, just to remind you in this setting, is that Palestine is under Roman occupation. It is really essentially an outpost of the Roman Empire. The Jews detested the Romans. And Zacchaeus is a Jewish name, and he's clearly identified with the Jewish tradition. He's basically siding with the oppressors. He's essentially a traitor. He's joined on with the wrong side to help them collect taxes that they take to run their empire. And the way that tax collection worked was multifaceted, but particularly where they are in Jericho is on the road, one of the main roads into Jerusalem. So it's a really good spot to collect taxes. So on transit taxes and customs taxes and passing down the road taxes and, we'll take a portion of what's in your cart taxes, that's how the Roman Empire sustained itself. And Zacchaeus wasn't just a part of that system, he was actually sort of the district manager of all of this. So from the standpoint of the Jews, he is compromised. He is an extortioner, he's a cheat, and he's lining his own pocket. The way this worked was tax collectors took a share on top of what they were collecting legitimately for themselves and put it in their own pockets. Therefore, he was despised. Those extra commissions, as they were called, were actually above and beyond what was authorized, but they had no choice but to pay it. So Zacchaeus was not only a tax collector, he was hated. He was the outcast. How does Jesus respond to him? Well, Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was, says our text. Wanted to see who Jesus was. Does that mean just see with his eyes? I don't think so. It probably actually means something much deeper than that. He wanted to figure out who this guy really was and what he was about. It wasn't just seeing with his eyes. But being short, he climbed up the tree. Now, climbing up a tree to get over the crowd is not a very dignified thing to do. If you're a kind of esteemed public official, climbing a tree doesn't exactly increase your dignity. But he climbs up a tree because he wants to see who Jesus is. There's a real curiosity there. He wants to see what Jesus is really about. Eagerness. It says he ran ahead. He's so eager to find out who Jesus is. Jesus reaches the spot and says to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." Now, I don't know about you, but I'm coming to you from Canada, and we're very polite people there. But we never invite ourselves to stay at other people's houses. I don't know how it is in Hong Kong. Do you do that here? Just invite yourself to stay. I'm coming to stay at your house tonight. Well, it's the initiative of Jesus that is so remarkable here. Jesus looks up the tree and finds Zacchaeus there and calls him by name, Zacchaeus. He knows who he is. Zacchaeus is trying to figure out who is this Jesus, and Jesus already knows who Zacchaeus is. This is the grace of God that comes before any response that we have of faith. He seeks out Zacchaeus. He knows Zacchaeus. He names Zacchaeus. And he says, "Come down to me. I must stay at your house." What's this business about staying at his house? Why is that so significant? Well, as in the Gospels often, and Luke loves this theme, Jesus is pretty much always on his way to have a meal with someone, or he's having that meal with someone, or he's on his way to having a meal with somebody else. Seems like Jesus is very much into food. Jesus would like our Thanksgiving banquet, I'm sure. But what's the point of all these meals? There's lots of meals in Luke's Gospel. If you read through Luke's Gospel sometime, just notice all the meals. What's the point of it? Well, those meals are always occasions of grace, always occasions of blessing, always occasions when Jesus is welcoming people to the table and saying, "My purpose is to gather all the outcasts out there who don't feel like they belong and all the people that the world despises and welcome them to my table as they respond to me in faith." That's what's going on in all those meals. And he's doing the same thing with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is hated and an outcast. And where else is he going to turn but to Jesus? And what does Jesus do? Invites himself. Let's have a dinner, and I'll stay at your house. It's going to be great. It's the grace of Jesus that goes ahead of any of our response. Remember that as we think about what Zacchaeus does in response. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Welcomed him with joy, says the Greek text. Isn't that an amazing response? The hated outcast, having been shown the love and grace and welcome of Jesus, responds with joy, responds with gladness of heart. He comes down at once. There's this immediate nature of this, right? He doesn't sit around for a long time thinking about it. He recognizes that offer in grace and love for what it is and responds immediately to it. It's so good he can't miss it. He welcomed him with joy, responding eagerly to that invitation. Well, what does the crowd say? Are they happy about that? No, they're not happy about that. There's muttering, there's murmuring, there's chit-chat, and it's very negative. He's gone to be the guest of a sinner. There goes Jesus again, hanging around with the wrong crowd, hanging around with those outcasts and those sinners. Do you know what kind of a guy this Zacchaeus is? Jesus is hanging around with him. Right? Mutter, 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 mutter. What the crowd takes to be the worst thing about Jesus, he hangs around with sinners, is actually the best thing about Jesus, that he hangs around with sinners. Because it means that people like you and I get to hang around with him. Because otherwise, we wouldn't qualify. That's the point of the gospel. That's the point of this grace. That's the point of him inviting himself into Zacchaeus' home to have a Thanksgiving dinner. So he's a sinner. Yes, he is a sinner, and that's the glory of the gospel, that Jesus even welcomes this sinner. And the response of welcoming Jesus with joy is, I think, Luke's way of saying he receives and understands who Jesus is. He understands this grace that has been extended to him in the love of Jesus. He responds to that with joy. Our text doesn't say he said the sinner's prayer, but essentially this is a conversion story. This is the story of him responding in faith with joy and thanksgiving by welcoming him into his home. Now, one of the things that's really interesting is now we get a very important picture of what happens to people who have responded in faith and trust to the offer of Jesus. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. And Luke puts it here to show the power of the gospel to change even the worst, so that they become, as the text says, a son of Abraham. In other words, a true Jew, a true follower after God. So the response is amazing. And it goes right to the heart of what Zacchaeus' life has been about. Zacchaeus' life has been about money. It's been about power. And it's been about lining his own pockets. That's what his old life was all about. And then he welcomes Jesus with gladness into his life. The grace of God is received. And then we get this picture of what he does in response. Don't miss it, folks. It's amazing. Zacchaeus stood up and said, "Look, Lord," calls him Lord. "Here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. If I've cheated anyone out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount." Now, we can just read through that and think, oh, okay, good, on we go, next story, next page. But if you actually just stop for a minute and think about that, that is an absolutely amazing sentence of the Bible. It is absolutely incredible because it suggests that what was at the very center of his life, his power and his possessions and his money, was completely turned upside down. That now Jesus is actually the center of his life. There's a new life that has been found in gladness in relationship to Jesus that changes the way he lives his life at the very core of what his life has been about. So what Luke is doing is showing us the power of the gospel. The power of the gospel goes so deep that it can actually change at that level. So, what's so amazing about this story? I give half my possessions to the poor. Half his possessions? That would have been a lot. That would have been a lot of stuff. He was a rich man, says the text. Not just he had some stuff. No, he was a rich man. And he'd gotten his riches through all these means I've been talking about. But he puts his resources in the service of the poor and of the needy. If you follow along the biblical teaching about poverty and the biblical teaching about money from start to finish, the overarching theme is about care for the poor and care for the needy. That's what you get over and over and over and over and over and over again. Because God loves the poor, and God has a special passion and love for the poor, and God's people have a special responsibility to the poor. So what does he do? He demonstrates what it is to be a true follower after God by giving half of his possessions away to the poor. It says, I give. Two verbs here. I give, I pay back. He gives half away. Giving to the poor. One of the things that's so important in the biblical story about giving to the poor, and it's a point that actually the Jewish rabbis pick up on and talk about all the time. I think as Christians, we always need some good Jewish rabbis to remind us of what we're missing in the Bible. Everyone should have a good rabbi. You need a rabbi, in addition to Pastor Greg. But one of the points the rabbis like to make about this point, about how the Old Testament portrays giving and money, is the point of giving to the poor is that you don't get something back. You're not giving for the sake of getting something back. It's not reciprocal. It's not for the sake of getting a reward. And so if Zacchaeus gives his money away to the poor, he's not getting a kind of social benefit out of that. He's not getting a personal benefit about that. He is really giving it away. He's not giving it with strings attached. That's what the rabbis say all the time. That's the point of giving. And the laws about giving in the Old Testament, the point of it is that you would give in reliance upon God in response to his grace and goodness and not expect to get anything back. And Jesus picks up on that theme all the time. Right? The other thing that Zacchaeus does here, he says, if I have cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Oh my goodness. Think about that. Most of what he has done is cheated people out of things. Most of his wealth has been gotten by cheating people from year to year. The crowd that's murmuring around would include probably lots of people that he had extorted somehow. They're the crowd that's watching this speech that he's making. This is a public declaration he's making. How about that? Lots of people to repay. Hundreds? Thousands? How many people would he have to repay? Now, according again to the Old Testament teaching, you probably don't read the fine print of the law of the Old Testament all that often, but a little detail, if you look it up, is that there is a formula for compensation if you have gotten something, money or goods, illegally. And the formula is you pay it back plus 20%. Okay? You think, okay. 20%. So if I have extorted $100 from you, I pay you back $120. Seems good, right? That was the Old Testament law. What does Zacchaeus say? Four times. So if I've extorted $100 from you, I pay you back $400. That's a lot of money. Think about thousands of people that he has extorted. What's the point? His new relationship with Jesus means he's putting things right. That he's using his money as an instrument of justice and right relationships, not for himself. It's an extravagant gesture. Such is a change of heart that he's going way beyond what he would have known, from 20%, just a little bit, add that $120 back to $400 back. Quite amazing. Such is the sign of new life in him. He's doing exactly what the rich young ruler in the previous chapter is not doing. The rich young ruler clings on to his wealth and refuses to give it up for the sake of following Jesus. What happens with Zacchaeus? He follows after Jesus, welcomes him with joy, and then opens his pocketbook and starts putting relationships right with the money that he has. Starts giving it away to the poor. Starts doing right by the people that he has done wrong to. So that his money is no longer his for himself anymore. It's an expression of his faith, what he's doing with his money. His faith has transformed the thing that was at the very heart of his life, his money and his power. So now he's using the money that he has gotten and his power to undo the wrongs and to put them right. So it's a picture of the power of conversion. It's a picture of the change deep in the heart of a man and putting him on a different path of life altogether about his money. So friends, what's the point for us? Well, there's so many good points for us. What Zacchaeus demonstrates so beautifully is that everything that he now has in his entire life has been brought under the lordship of Christ. And I think even for us, many of us, we think of money as one thing in our life and our faith as something else. We think of our faith as a piety or doing our Bible study or even coming to church on Sunday, but really it's disconnected from the money part of our life. We keep that over here somewhere. They're disconnected, right? And in Zacchaeus' life, they were disconnected until he met Jesus. And what happened was he brought all of the money and his power and position and authority and all of what he had gotten through it, and he brought it under the lordship of Christ when he met this Jesus and welcomed him with joy. So it wasn't this arrangement anymore. It was bringing all of this under Christ and submitting it to him. And friends, that's the message for us. If we're ones who have welcomed Jesus into our lives and recognized him as Lord, that's what Zacchaeus calls him, as we have, the calling for us is to bring all of our lives under that lordship and not keep our material life and our work life and our money life over here somewhere and keep Jesus over there somewhere. It's very tempting. It's very easy to keep these two different poles over here. But you couldn't have a more powerful passage about the lordship of Christ bringing everything under him. And that's what Zacchaeus does, willingly, joyfully, gladly. So that his believing in Jesus and trusting in Jesus has expression in the way that he behaves, the way that he's living his life. And a little detail of this text I don't want you to miss is Jesus says, "This now is a true son of Abraham." You might wonder, well, what's going on with that? What is he talking about? Well, what Jesus is so concerned about is to bring together the true Israelites, the people who have responded to him. To be a son of Abraham is to be someone who lives by faith. So this is Zacchaeus living by faith, trusting in this Jesus and welcoming him. And what Jesus wants to do is recreate a whole community of people on the basis of those that have welcomed him with joy. The true sons of Abraham are the ones who welcome him with joy. The true sons of Abraham are the ones who live out that faith, bring all things under his lordship, and use all of their resources for the sake of Jesus and that kingdom. So what this demonstrates also for us, of course, is a whole new relationship with money. He has a new relationship with Jesus and welcoming Jesus with joy. But what he goes to immediately is the recognition that he needs to change that which is at the center of his life because it's out of line with what Jesus is all about. So responding with joy is not just a matter of his heart, which of course it is, but it's a matter of his hands and his feet and his wallet and his checkbook and anything else that he had. If he had a credit card, it would have been a matter of his credit card. But I don't think plastic was invented yet. So it goes really right to the heart of it. This welcoming with Jesus with joy means a new relationship with money and a new relationship with his power, position, and authority, which he had. It changes everything, and it goes very, very deep in his life. He's caught up in a new way of life. He's part of a new community, these sons of Abraham that Jesus is gathering around him. And it changes everything, even the nitty-gritty stuff of his life, like what he does with his wallet. That's what the gospel does. And it's so important that this is on account of him welcoming Jesus with joy. And this is a response of joy and a response of freedom and a response of thanksgiving. I've made the point he's going way beyond what the Old Testament law required, way beyond. This isn't a matter of legalism. It's not a matter of obligation. It's not a matter of finding the right rule book and looking up the right answer. It's way beyond that. This is a response of joy and freedom that issues an amazing generosity and a passion to put things right in his life. And friends, that's a picture of the power of the gospel. So may it be so with us, that we so recognize and welcome who Jesus is with joy, that we allow the gospel to transform our lives from top to bottom, even the things that are most at the center of our lives, so that we offer them back to the Lord with gladness and joy for his service and for his glory. Amen.